to make necessary political decisions. At this point, any stance by the atomic agency could have an important effect on the stalled talks. This week, Iran's top diplomat said Tehran and the agency's agreement in March was mutually satisfactory. He warned that political interference in the technical affairs of the agency is totally unconstructive. Amir Abdullahian's comments came ahead of a meeting of the IAEA's Board of Governors scheduled for June the 6th. Days left to the meeting, the IAEA chief has arrived in Israel after Tel Aviv released documents alleging Iran spied on the IAEA. Iran says Israel, which has refused to join the NPT and is believed to possess hundreds of nuclear warheads, hates the JCPOA and wants to derail the effort to revive it.
The problem with much of what the International Atomic Energy Agency has been doing is that it is trying to find excuses to really, make out that the Iranian nuclear program is a military program. And one of the problems with the IAEA is they're not looking anywhere near as closely at the Israelis, who do have nuclear weapons. They tried to keep it secret, but Mordecai Vanunu blew the whistle in the Sunday Times here in Britain back in the 1980s and did a massive jail term for his when he was kidnapped, actually, for his trouble. That they do have many nuclear weapons, probably something like 200, they say.
Reports say the United States and its Western allies, pushed by Israel, plan to pile pressure on Iran at the upcoming IAEA meeting. Tehran has warned that it would respond firmly and appropriately to any such move because Tehran has been cooperating based on the agreement reached in March. The fate of months of negotiations between Iran and the P4+1 seems to be at stake as a meeting of the IAEA Board of Governors draws close. Who would benefit from a possible collapse of the talks?
Prices in the Eurozone continued their march higher in May as the inflation rate hit a record high of 8.1%. This is the seventh consecutive month of record high inflation in the 19 countries that share the euro. The inflation in May is up from April's record high of 7.4% and higher than expectations of 7.8%. This comes after inflation prints from several major European economies surprised to the upside in recent days.
Yes, well, this trend has been going on for months now, and it has exceeded even the most negative predictions of Eurozone central banks and the European Central Bank.
German inflation came in at an annual 8.7% in May. It significantly outstripped analysts' expectations of 8% and marked a sharp incline from the 7.8% seen in April. Germany is planning to ease pressure on consumers through a series of policies, including cheap monthly tickets for regional public transport between June and August and a discount for drivers at gas stations.
This is partly to blame on the energy crisis that has been exaggerated by the ongoing war in Ukraine, but also on matters that are beyond Europe's reach, like the lockdown in China and also other factors in European economies.
French inflation also surpassed expectations in May to a notch record 5.8%, up from 5.4% in April. France's economy contracted in the first quarter of the fiscal year under the impact of soaring inflation. The economy shrank 0.2% from the previous quarter after last year's strong 6.8% recovery as the COVID-19 pandemic eased. Spanish consumer prices also jumped by an annual 8.5% in May, exceeding expectations of 8.1%. Inflation in the Eurozone is now four times more than the ECB target of 2%. Multiple factors have contributed to the rising inflation rate in the Eurozone. First and foremost is a rising energy price. Across the Eurozone, the record annual consumer price increase was driven by soaring energy costs, which hit 39.2%. That's up from 37.5% in April.
I think it was all calculated in the decision-making process of the European leaders. I think most of the countries are now dealing with this extreme rise of gas and oil prices, especially oil, is hitting European consumers very hard. But the political pressure from the Eastern European countries and from the US, but also from big European countries, was for this oil embargo on Russia. And it was like a political, let's say, bet.
The European Union leaders have struck a deal to ban the majority of Russian oil imports over Moscow's military operation in Ukraine. The agreement covers more than two-thirds of oil imports from Russia. The measure is expected to further push up energy prices. Then there are disruptions in the global supply chains. The world economy is still reeling from COVID-related bottlenecks, and the war in Ukraine has caused serious disruptions to global trade. And finally, COVID lockdowns in China have put further strain on the global economy.
So right now, central banks are in a somehow deadlock situation because there are no easy way out of this inflationary trend. There is also the risk of creating a recession if the rise in rates and the contraction of the expansion of the economy is very abrupt.
ECB President Christine Lagarde and Chief Economist Philip Lane, in a bid to contain inflation, have already announced certain measures, but economists doubt if they will be enough. Earlier this month, European Central Bank President Lagarde said she was anticipating a rate rise at the central bank's meeting in July. The move could cause another recession in the Eurozone.
The Israeli regime is pressing ahead with its barbaric violence against Palestinians. Israeli military forces have shot and killed a Palestinian woman in the southern part of the occupied West Bank. The Palestinian Health Ministry identified the 31-year-old victim as Gufran Harun Hamed Warasne. The Tel Aviv regime claims the woman was trying to stab Israeli soldiers, but witnesses say that Warasne posed little threat to the soldiers. She has started a new job at a radio station 3 days prior to being killed.
This woman was apparently also a journalist, starting her first day of work. And it's hard for me to believe that this was someone attacking Israelis. This is an excuse. If they produced a knife, I can't imagine that it was the woman who had the wife. It was produced by the Israelis themselves.
The incident happened close to the Al-Arub refugee camp, located 15 kilometers south of Bethlehem. The Palestine Red Crescent Society said the Israeli forces prevented its medical staff from attending to Warasne. They only managed to attend her 20 minutes after she was injured. The killing comes amid rising tensions between Palestinians and Israeli forces in the occupied territories. Local and international rights groups have condemned what they call Israel's excessive use of force and shoot-to-kill policy against Palestinians.
They're being protected. The Israelis are being protected in the U.S. and most likely the rest of the Western countries. So are they being reckless? Well, if you live in a part of the world where you get the full information, yes, I think you could say that they're being reckless. But in fact, they're being permitted to continue their genocide and their recklessness without being held to account. This is the problem.
In recent weeks, Israel has stepped up its provocative moves against Palestinians. Far-right Israeli extremists, supported by the regime, have just held the controversial flag march in Al-Quds. Israelis raided in and around the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. The march was aimed at celebrating the occupation and subsequent annexation of East Jerusalem in 1967, a move that has not been recognized by the international community. Some chanted racist slogans, including death to Arabs, and attacked Palestinian residents while backed by armed Israeli forces. Dozens of Palestinians were arrested across Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank a day earlier.
Well, everyone is asking that. And given the incitement that the Israelis are causing, the deliberate attempts to provoke Palestinians and to cause trouble and violence against Palestinians, then yes, it's very possible that the Palestinians will participate in an uprising. You could say there's an uprising right now against Israeli violence and provocations.
It's believed that Israel is deliberately fanning the flames of violence across the occupied territories. The clashes at Al-Quds had sparked fears of another armed conflict, similar to an 11-day war in May last year, between Israel and the Gaza-based Palestinian resistance groups, including Hamas.
It's, until now, at a relatively low level, but it could get, if it becomes really popular, and then the Palestinians could make a major major uprising against the Israelis. And frankly, it's one of the few things that might bring the kind of attention to them that they really need. The world needs to look at it. And as I told you, here in the U.S., we're not getting that view unless we know where to look.
Back in May, Israeli forces killed Al Jazeera TV correspondent Shuri Nabahle while she was covering a military raid on the northern city of Jenin in the occupied West Bank. Hundreds of Palestinians have been injured in raids by Israeli forces and settlers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Al-Quds during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan.
Greek authorities impounded an Iranian flag tanker carrying oil earlier this month, citing U.S. sanctions on Iran. The United States later confiscated the oil on board. Iran's foreign ministry on Wednesday summoned the Greek charge d'affaires to protest the seizure of the Iranian-flagged vessel and confiscation of crude cargo in the European country's territorial waters. The ministry condemned Greece's unacceptable surrender to illegal U.S. pressures and said the seizure of the cargo of the ship with the flag of the Islamic Republic of Iran was an example of international piracy.
Well, the Greek authorities have acted evidently under instructions from the United States, and probably they don't even have an explanation. They just executed what they were requested, as it always happens with countries that are under the patronage of the United States. So the situation is always the same. The United States decides who should be punished, and there are some executors.
Iran's Ports and Maritime Organization issued a statement also describing the move as an act of piracy that was in violation of international standards. According to the statement, the vessel had faced adverse weather conditions and experienced some technical problems which led it to call for assistance. Under international and technical regulations and standards, the state with the nearest coastline to the vessel calling for assistance due to safety threats, which was in this case Greece, should have cooperated by guiding the vessel to a place of safety where the problems could be resolved before sending it off on its international voyage. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has released a video of the recent seizure of two Greek oil tankers in the Persian Gulf over maritime violations. The video shows IRGC's heli-borne special forces boarding the Greek ships ahead of their seizure over violations in the waters of the Persian Gulf. Iran's foreign ministry said one of the vessels, the Delta Poseidon, was sailing international waters at the time, adding that the second tanker was near the Iranian coast when seized. The ministry also said 9 Greeks were among the crews of both vessels, but did not give a number of the other sailors on board. Iran's ports and maritime organization said on Saturday that the crews of the 2 Greek oil tankers are not detained but are aboard the vessels and in good health. U.S. State Secretary Antony Blinken labeled the seizure as unjustified, calling for the release of the tankers and their crews. France, too, called it, quote, a serious violation of international law, while making no mention of the seized Iranian tanker. The seizure of an Iranian oil tanker comes as talks for the revival of the 2015 deal remain stalled.
Well, evidently they've calculated that exerting what they call the maximum pressure on Iran is the necessary thing to do in order to obtain the maximum during the negotiations. It is something that it's difficult to evaluate, but evidently is not a friendly move. Is an indication of the fact that for them, Iran still is under sanctions and therefore to be excluded from international trade in energy, in the energy sector.
The U.S. administration claims it wants to see the JCPOA restored, but actions speak louder than words.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. Well, in the previous episode, we talked about a roadmap which the Quran provides every human being, every obedient human being, every individual. As I said, there are 2 groups of people. One group of people is rebellious. They rebel against God, and the other group of people is fearful. They fear to stand before their Lord. There are those people who, because of fear of Allah, do not commit any sins. So there are 2 groups of people. Some are rebellious and some are obedient. And of course, as for those people who are rebellious, their abode is the hellfire. And as for those people who are obedient and who protect their souls, who care for their souls, their abode is the Jannah, the paradise. And I also said that God has given us the capacity to tell the difference between right and wrong, and between truth and falsehood. And of course, we have not been left wandering on a crossroad. Never. لا إكراه في الدين قد تبين الرشد من الغي فمن يكفر بالطاغوت ويؤمن بالله فقد استمسك بالعروة الوثقى. Of course, قد تبين الرشد من الغي. The right is clearly distinguished from wrong. The truth is clear from the falsehood. That's what the Quran says. And of course, as I said, we are not here to explain or to interpret the verses of the Quran. Of course, I'm trying to give you some ideas into what the religious teachings are about a better life. Because at the end of the day, we are going to go to the next world. Our eternal abode is the next world, of course. So when we speak about life, the real life is not this world, the life we live in this world. The real life begins in the afterworld. And so we have to prepare ourselves for the real life, for that eternal abode. And that's why the Quran says, قَدْ تَبَيَّنَ الرُّشْدُ مِنَ الْغَيَةِ. Of course, the right has been clarified and distinguished from the wrong, the truth from the falsehood, of course. And we as human beings have the volition, the faculty of reason. Of course, every individual has been gifted with the faculty of reason. And that is the best capacity, the most important capacity, the most important faculty that distinguishes man from other animals, from other creatures, from other animate beings. The right path is clear from the wrong one, of course. Allah does not force anyone to follow the right path. And He does not compel anyone to traverse the right path. There's no doubt about it. لا إكراه في الدين. There's no compulsion in religion. If Allah were to force human beings, what would be the meaning of justice? Justice would have been meaningless. If He were to force every individual to follow the right path, then hell and heaven, hell and paradise would be meaningless. Resurrection would have no meaning. Because we are compelled, we are like ants, like other creatures who act on instincts. That's not the case with human beings. Of course, human beings have the willpower, the volition, and that makes us different from other animals, from other creatures.
Changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
We are intelligent. We are a volitional creature. We have free will. And these are the two main characteristics that man has. There is a saying, I remember, there is a saying from the commander of faithful Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, who says, إِنَّ اللَّهَ خَصَّ الْمَلَائِكَةَ بِالْعَقْلِ دُونَ الشَّهْوَةِ وَالْغَضَبِ وَخَصَّ الْحَيْوَانَاتِ بِهِمَا دُونَهُ وَلَكِنْ شَرَّفَ الْإِنسَانِ. The hadith is lengthy, but because some of our audience may not make sense of the hadith, I would like to just explain, to give the concept of the hadith. Based on this hadith, God has clarified everything for us. He has clarified the road for us, which leads to either hell or heaven. Both roads are clear, and there's nothing in this map ambiguous or murky or dark. Everything has been clarified meticulously by Allah. When you open the map, Allah says, these two entrances lead to either the hellfire or to paradise. Allah says in the verse which I recited, Allah says, Tagha, Tagha wa athara al-hayat al-dunya. So these are two major highways that leads to the hellfire. Tagha, persistently, willfully, rebelling and transgressing against Allah. And of course, a person who rebels against God and who transgresses the bounds, the limits prescribed by Allah, then of course his eternal abode is the hellfire. And of course, the saying from Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, in Allah khassal malaikata bil aql duna shahwati wal ghadab, God the Almighty has distinguished the angels with reason. It means that the angels have reason only, have intellect, aql.
دون شهوت والغضب. They do not have lust and they do not have wrath. Ghadab means anger. The angels do not become angry. The angels do not have lust. وَخَصَّ الْحَيْوَانَاتِ بِهِمَا. And God distinguished the animals, the quadruped, the beasts, with شهوة and غضب. You know, the animals have lust and they have anger. These two faculties are there. But ولكن شرف الإنسان, God honored human being by giving human being both the faculty of reason and shahwa and ghadab, both of them. You can see man has the power, the faculty of reason, and he has lust, he has anger, he becomes angry. Inshallah, we will carry on this discussion in the following episode. Until then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. So I need, so I need, all I need. Love is all I need.
In the limelight.
The U.S. regime is playing with fire that could badly burn the American people for no fault of their own, says Kahan International staff writer in an article published under the heading, U.S. Stupidity Pushing Planet to the Edge of the Precipice. Stay tuned for more. The U.S. regime is playing with fire that could badly burn the American people for no fault of their own, since in case of a direct conflict with either Russia in Europe or with China in East Asian waters, the flames of war might engulf North America as well, given the reach, range, speed, and precision of the sophisticated weapons in the armory of belligerents. Wisdom is conspicuously absent in Washington. If not, weapons would not have been supplied to Ukraine, which is involved in a purely inter-Slavic conflict with Russia that warrants the staying out of all other parties, including the European Union and the U.S. regime. The same idiocy is being shown by the U.S. in East Asia, which President Joe Biden recently visited to stoke unnecessary tensions with North Korea and China, especially with threats to militarize the inter-Chinese issue of breakaway Taiwan. It is thus natural for Moscow to step up its operations in Ukraine against an erring Volodymyr Zelensky, a Zionist comedian who, with American back, had been dubiously elected as president in Kiev and carried the joke of joining NATO too far. The same could be said of Beijing, which has no other choice but to step up its air and sea patrols in the Strait of Taiwan to safeguard China's sovereignty and territorial integrity following the intrusion of a U.S. naval force in those waters and the American armaments dispatched to Taipei. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov points out that Moscow believes the White House is deliberately pouring oil on the fire by sending weapons to Ukraine, and that the United States is obviously holding the line that it will fight Russia to the last Ukrainian. This is evident by the new $700 million weapons package announced by Joe Biden, which includes helicopters, Javelin anti-tank weapon systems, tactical vehicles, and much more, such as advanced rocket systems that can precisely strike long-range targets 70 kilometers deep inside Russia. Peskov said Moscow was skeptical about Kiev not firing such rockets into Russia as the conflict rages on. This increases the risk of direct confrontation between the two countries of Russia and the U.S. that might first destroy the economy and political stability of Europe before bombs and missiles begin to devastate the cities of North America, which due to their remoteness from the battlefields of the old war had hitherto remained safe. Meanwhile, the Chinese military has conducted a readiness patrol in the seas and airspace around Taiwan in response to what it said, the collusion between Washington and Taipei. The People's Liberation Army Eastern Theater Command said in a statement recently, the United States has frequently made moves on the Taiwan issue, saying one thing and doing another, instigating support for independence of the Breakaway Island, which will push Taiwan into a dangerous situation. All these dangerous developments, where dialogue is conspicuously absent, do not bode well for international peace and stability, which, in case of Washington's stupidity in starting direct military conflicts, will suck in many other countries into an unwanted world war that could be detrimental to human survival on Earth in view of the possible of use of weapons of mass destruction and definite destruction of the fragile ecology of already critical planets.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, behavior with the non-believers. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk how to behave with the non-believers. When we look at the Islamic texts and Islamic teachings, and since we have many people living in the West, many Muslims living in the West, where the societies are full of non-believers, like people from other religions. So there are some specific things that we need to keep in our mind. The first thing is that we cannot put all the non-believers and those who are non-Muslims in one category. Therefore, we need to categorize them in different types. The first type which we can categorize them is those who are non-believers, who are non-Muslims, but they never had any kind of mentality of having, you know, enemy or being enemy of us, or they are not having any mentality of basically having a conflict with us. Therefore, they want to have a peaceful life, and we also want to have a peaceful life. So this is the first category where the non-believers and the believers, the Muslims and the non-Muslims, where they both want to live a peaceful life next to each other. So this is very important that we categorize, we divide the types of the people, the types of the non-Muslims, that when we are living in a society, or maybe if they are living in the Muslim country, they are after a peaceful life. And therefore, we need to also cooperate with them. We need to also, if they are in a non-Muslim country, we need to cooperate with them. We need to provide them a peaceful place to live. And when we are living in a Western country, we should look after the peaceful way of living together, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the behaviouring with the non-Muslims and how to behave with them. And we said that since we are living in the West, most of the our brothers, Muslim brothers and sisters, they are living in the West. Therefore, we need to see that when we are dealing with the non-believers, how do we need to deal? And this is a common question where we said, like, the enemies, if they are the enemies of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we should not be the friend. Now, this is something that we said, that if they are non-Muslims, we should not become the good friends or the friends of them. It means that in order to achieve the goal, in order to reach to perfection, we should not follow their footstep. And we should follow the footsteps of Islam or the things that are said by Islam. But on the other hand, if the non-Muslims where we are living, or the kuffar, the disbelievers, if we are living with them in a society, we are in the same society, we need to have a peaceful life with each other without having any kind of conflict and dispute. And this is very important, that we are not living in a place with a conflict. We should live with the peace in one place. And this peace can help us reaching the perfection. This peace can help us, or can help others, to follow the right path, to get the guidance. And if there is no peace, then obviously there are many difficulties, there are many issues. And we can see this in many countries where we do not find any kind of peace amongst the people, amongst the groups of the society, and there you can see how people are living. Therefore, Islam emphasizes that even if a disbeliever or non-believer is living next to you, you should live a peaceful life without having a conflict and dispute with them. And that is the first lesson which is given by Islam. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
Although Joe Biden indicated that he would sell only defensive weapons to Saudi Arabia, the U.S. continues to provide the Saudis with missiles, parts, maintenance, logistical support, and intelligence. Without U.S. support, the Saudi war effort would be greatly hampered. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written jointly by Aisha Juman and Donald A. Smith, writers. This article is published under the heading, Corporate Media Failed to Cover War in Yemen Due to U.S. Support for Saudi Arabia. Stay tuned for more. News outlets in the United States give prime coverage to the conflict in Eastern Europe, but mostly ignore the devastating war that the U.S. has supported since March 2015 between a Saudi-led coalition that includes the United Arab Emirates in Yemen. As a result, most of the U.S. public is unaware of the war's catastrophic impact on the Yemeni population. According to the United Nations, around 400,000 people have died and 16.2 million are at the brink of starvation. The causes of this devastation include a Saudi-led bombing campaign that targets infrastructure, food sources, and health services, as well as coercive measures including a blockade directed at destroying Yemen's economy. The UN has called the situation in Yemen the largest humanitarian crisis in the world. What's important to realize and what the news media fail to discuss is that the U.S. is complicit in causing this crisis. The U.S. is the main supplier of weapons to Saudi Arabia. According to the Brookings Institute, 73% of Saudi arms imports come from the U.S. In fact, 24% of U.S. weapons exports go to Saudi Arabia. Former President Donald Trump was eager to brag about the high sales of U.S. arms to the Saudis. Although Joe Biden indicated that he would sell only defensive weapons to Saudi Arabia, the U.S. continues to provide the Saudis with missiles, parts, maintenance, logistical support, and intelligence. Without U.S. support, the Saudi war effort would be greatly hampered. In view of the devastation to Yemen, it's no surprise that several efforts were made by Congress to end U.S. support for the war. In 2019, Congress passed a War Powers Resolution calling for an end to U.S. support for the Saudis, partly in response to the brutal assassination of journalist and U.S. resident Jamal Khashoggi. However, Trump, at a time, vetoed the resolution. Likewise, the House of Representatives passed several versions of the National Defense Authorization Act that included language calling for a complete halt to U.S. support for the war. But during final negotiations, those provisions were dropped. Recently, lawmakers in Congress, including Representatives Pramila Jayapal and Peter DeFazio, included that they will introduce a Yemen War Powers Resolution to end all U.S. support for the war. Still, some policymakers want the U.S. to continue support for the Saudi war on Yemen. Their motivations include a desire for continued oil supplies as well as strategic issues. Another factor is the money earned from arms sales. but others point to the high cost of the U.S.-Saudi relationship, including security concerns. In April of this year, 30 members of Congress wrote a letter to Secretary of State Antony Blinken calling for a recalibration of the U.S.-Saudi partnership. The letter mentions the brutal war on Yemen and Saudi operation at home. Furthermore, the Saudis have been unwilling to raise oil production to aid the international coalition. Others have published on the ways in which the Saudi-U.S. relationship is damaging to U.S. interests, including dispelling the myth of U.S. dependency on Saudi oil and threats to national security. A discouraging development is that on May 17th, Saudi Deputy Defense Minister Khaled bin Salman met with U.S. Under Secretary of Defense for Policy Colin Kull, and the U.S. confirmed its commitment to the U.S.-Saudi military collaboration. Moreover, recent reports indicate that Biden is planning to meet with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman early next month. This planned meeting is distressing to many anti-war activists because Biden had earlier promised to make bin Salman a pariah for his role in killing of Khashoggi and the war on Yemen.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor Israel.
Majh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on May 7th, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution on the occasion of the International Al-Quds Day. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, in his speech on the occasion of International Quds Day, referring to the change in the balance of power in favor of Islamic world and Palestine, emphasized, "I tell you with confidence the downward movement of the Zionist regime has started and will not stop."
Today, hope of achieving victory is stronger than ever. Today, the balance of power has swung in favor of the Palestinians. The Zionist enemy has become weaker year after year, while its army, which used to describe itself as the army which will never be defeated, has turned into an army which will never taste victory after its debacle in the 33-day war in Lebanon and its experiences in 22-day and 8-day wars. As for its political condition, it has been forced to hold 4 elections in the space of 2 years. In terms of security as well, it continuously tastes defeat. Moreover, the increasing desire among Jews to emigrate from that land has become a source of embarrassment for that overconfident regime.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
Its serious endeavor to normalize relations with a few Arab countries with the assistance of the US is another sign of the decline of that regime. Of course, this will not help that regime in any way either. Tens of years ago, it established relations with Egypt, but since then it has become much weaker and much more vulnerable. Therefore, will the normalization of relations with a few weak and small countries be able to help that regime? Of course, those countries will not benefit from the relations either, as the Zionist regime will transgress against their properties and their land, and it will promote corruption and insecurity in their countries. Of course, these truths should not make others forget about their heavy duty.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Following intense UN-supervised meetings between the warring sides in Yemen, the UN envoy for Yemen announced that the parties have agreed to renew the current truce in Yemen for 2 more months. The truce is extended under the same terms as the original agreement, which first came into effect on the 2nd of April.
When the United Nations agreed to our conditions, which included releasing the salaries of government employees, we saw that it was our duty to respond to the renewal of the truce, although we were aware that the enemy would not respect the truce as it did previously. But we adhere to peaceful solutions and we will make concessions in order to end the war.
Observers say renewing the truce is a win for the Yemenis, who stood alone during 7 years of war, without any support from the international community or the United Nations.
The United Nations was absent throughout the years of war, and the armistice is not an achievement for the international body, but rather a success for Sana'a, which remained alone in facing war and siege without any support from the international community or any allies.
Grundberg said he will continue engaging with the parties to implement and consolidate all elements of the truce.
People, he hoped that renewing the UN brokered truce will build for a comprehensive political solution to end the war that devastated their lives and country. They say the international community should now step in properly to support the political process in Yemen. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
France's government has warned, don't expect inflation to return to normal until the end of 2023. At nearly 6%, French inflation is the highest since 1985, and the government says the peak won't even be reached until this winter. It's a stunningly serious diagnosis. Inflation has seemingly been the number one voter complaint since the euro currency was introduced in 1999, and now it's worse than ever. Many are pointing the finger at the pan-European project, with Brussels demanding austerity and forcing Paris to ignore mass protests and public opinion.
This inflation is a symptom of the profound crisis caused by the policies of neoliberalism put in place since the 1980s. Above all, the policies seek merely to enrich stockholders and create constant dividends. This inflation is going to last, and the government is only making a wild guess that it will end by 2024.
Across the EU, only Malta has managed to keep inflation lower. France has been saved by its constantly derided socialist-inspired measures, such as caps on energy prices. However, many are demanding more price caps, re-indexed pensions, immediate bonuses, higher wages across the board, and especially for low-wage workers, in order to keep inflation from making the poverty rate skyrocket.
All the countries of the European Union are basically already in a recession. The 2008 financial crisis was followed by a forced era of austerity, which created a structural lack of demand and investment in Europe. Making massive public investments with efforts to an ecological transition would create both jobs and demand for goods and possibly avoid another Great Depression.
80% of France says they're watching their expenses more carefully, which seems likely to push France's consumer-driven economy officially into a recession next quarter. 70% are distrustful of their economic future, which is record pessimism so soon after a presidential election. After all the austerity, the French are being told to expect nearly 2 years of widespread economic hardship. That may not only affect this month's legislative elections, but it could lead to major social unrest yet again. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
...150 foreign ambassadors and officials have visited Tehran to take part in the 33rd anniversary of the passing away of a man who changed the course of history in Iran, Imam Khomeini. Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini was the founder of the Islamic Republic and the former leader of the 1979 Islamic Revolution, which put an end to centuries of autocracy in Iran. Here, people believe the scale of Imam Khomeini's impact transcends Iran's boundaries.
The Islamic Revolution of Iran has proved to the Nigerian populace that if you are determined to eliminate any unjust leader and you follow the course, you can reach a result in some of the curriculum of the higher education in Nigeria. There are some space being open for Imam Khomeini to talk about the Imam Khomeini and the revolution of Islamic Republic in Nigeria curriculum of education.
Thanks to Imam Khomeini, we have witnessed a freedom-seeking movement forming in Muslim and even non-Muslim nations, which challenges imperialism and encourages dignity and independence from the global arrogance. This is the miracle of the Islamic Revolution.
Imam Khomeini passed away in 1989 at the age of 86, almost a decade after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, which saw the overthrow of the U.S.-backed Pahlavi regime in Iran, headed by Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, known as the Shah. Imam Khomeini spent many years in exile in Iraq, Turkey, and France, from where he led a swelling grassroots movement, which ultimately ousted the Shah